Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron, and I've got three people here in the studio right now. We've got Rachel Goddard. Morning, Rachel.
Morena.
And we've got Nicole Hancock. Morning.
Good morning.
And we've got Mike from Raglan Chocolate. That's actually your official last name now.
Mike Chocolate.
Morena. Yeah, Mike from Raglan Chocolate. It's a long name. So welcome, everybody. So we're here to talk. We're not talking climate change specifically. We're talking about a climate response program that you developed, Rachel. Now, we were just talking off the air. You do work for council, but this is a program that you developed before you were working for council as their climate advisor. Is that, can we call you that?
Do you want the official title?
Yeah, go on. Go on. Give us
Climate Action and Sustainability Manager.
I knew it would be long and hard to remember. So yeah, she's their climate person.
Yeah.
And it's been going well enough. They got you an assistant, have they? Did I get
the... Yes, that's true.
Yep, okay. I'll bring that up a little bit closer. So you developed this program, and Nicole, you've been employed by the program to do the work, do some of the work?
Yes.
Is that how you describe it?
Yeah, so about a year ago, there was a sort of expression of interest for people to do the training to become an advisor, and so I joined up for that and did the training.
And you and Jody were both the advisors?
Yeah, Jody Pinfold was another of the trainers, and I think there were about a dozen of us from right across the Waikato region.
Yeah, who were all working with local businesses or organisations.
Yeah, so shall I give you some background?
Well, I just want to lead to Mike, because that's why Mike's here, because Raglan Chocolate is one of the organisations that you've worked with.
I guess I was a guinea pig.
You were a guinea pig. Right, we've got Mike the guinea pig is here. Okay. So now I've settled that. Rachel, can you just talk a little bit about what it actually is? Because we did have an interview about a year ago,
mm-hmm.
Talking about it, but most people, and I certainly have forgotten most
Absolutely.
Of what we talked about.
Yeah, I'll refresh your memory and mine. It has been a long time. Morena, everyone. So the Climate Response Program was an idea that I guess the trigger for the establishment of that program, there were three things. One was the government directive at the time. They'd just developed the emissions reduction plan, or they're thinking of doing that, and the carbon neutral program, and there was all the financial disclosures. So there was a lot of movement in the government around, you know, trying to reduce emissions and to get people to mitigate, to write emission reduction plans, offset, etc. So I think... For me at the time, the gap was there weren't many smaller charities or NGOs involved in that. They didn't have the resourcing or funding to do that. So that was one driver to understand what was coming from the government and that gap or that need in different sectors. Secondly, the idea that we needed to develop more capacity and capability in the region, because we didn't have very many people working in the space that could do that sort of stuff
Could help people.
Yeah, so to support organisations on that journey to perhaps, you know, write an emission reduction plan or set some targets or change behaviour or look at efficiencies within the organisation, such as a site audit and things like that. And then the real trigger was, I guess, what was happening with climate change, you know, how prevalent and tangible it now is. If we think about, you know, the last decade, we've had 4 or 5 times increase in the severity of climate-related weather events. In New Zealand, you know, with sea level rise is predicted to be, you know, higher and faster than anticipated. And we've all seen the impacts of the recent weather events, and these are, you know, getting worse. And then in addition to that, we've got the, you know, the ceiling of 1.5 degrees, which we're probably going to breach in the next less than a decade, which is deeply concerning. So it was all around how do we mobilize people? How do we get them to come on board to understand, you know, track their emissions, their actions, their operations, you know, build capacity in the region by training up. We trained 11 advisors in the region, affiliated with community groups, grassroots level. And then we put it out as a pilot, and we had 25 organizations, small to medium enterprises, charities, NGOs, Māori organisations come on board, and we matched the advisors who underwent training. They went into the organisations and they helped them essentially map their operations and look at the different components, wastewater, energy, travel, etc., procurement, and also do a site audit on waste, energy and things like that. So that's basically in a nutshell how it all happened.
And so the gap that you're trying to fill is like, well, like for instance, if you take Fonterra, they can afford to employ whole staff members who are focused on climate issues. And I think, is that what Tony does? Yeah, so a local resident, Tony Houston, is involved. That's one part of his or all of his work at Fonterra. I'm not sure. I haven't talked about him with him that recently. But but Fonterra employs, what, thousands of people, whereas Mike, how many people working for Raglan Chocolate?
Two of us.
Right.
But that's about 60 to 80 hours a week each.
Okay, so it should really be three or four.
Yes.
But yeah, still, even if there were four, you couldn't afford to have someone specialising in climate issues.
Absolutely. And as you see, as we'll talk a little bit more about some of these tools, the system's not really capturing small-scale businesses. And a number of the tools that we were able to, we looked at measuring, we didn't even reach the threshold, the size of business we have.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that was the value in going through this program, is some of that learning that was picked up.
So is this something that you guys had wanted to do?
I wouldn't say we had pursued it, but because it's always been fundamental to our thinking, when Rachel mentioned it, it was just, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Really would like to be part of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's happened now since we talked a year ago is that you've gone through this process with Raglan Chocolate and you've made changes, Mike?
We have. We use several tools with Nicole, looking at our carbon footprint, mapping out various areas of the business that we were looking for indications of where we stood on climate related goals, I guess.
Yeah.
And out of that came some actions for the future. And if I look at this now,
he's looking literally at an A3 piece of paper.
I'm literally looking at this piece of paper.
It looks like a mind map. No, it's not quite a mind map, but was it a mind map?
Well, it's if you think about a donut, it's sort of a donut with concentric rings and then radial lines coming out, and we split it into different categories like wastewater, energy, travel, procurement, and we've tried to encourage people to think about their operations and changes they could make to their operations or activities. Things that are easy to do, low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then increasingly harder. So, and then that links to a carbon calculator that helps people track their emissions, gives them the number. And then once they've got that number, that baseline, they can set targets to try to reduce to working towards that. But it's not just about the number. The program did also, I had neglected to mention that we, because it's a pilot, the advisors all input into that program as well. So we had the core information and things we wanted to achieve. But as we went through the process, the advisors were very, very interested in the social aspects. Because I'm an environmental scientist, I like the numbers.
Yeah.
They were very interested in the social and cultural aspects. So that led into colonization or decolonization and the effects around climate change, climate justice. So it made it a rounded, robust program, which was very interesting. And we partnered with GoEco and Padacorde to do that. So that added that cemented that environmental and social and cultural intersection. And then I also forgot to mention, sorry, I have to do a little plug here for our funders and supporters, Trust Waikato, Waikato Regional Council, Hamilton City Council, and Waikato District Council, who I work for, either funded or supported us to deliver the pilot.
Right, so, yeah. And so, Nicole, your background is basically marine science. You work for the Department of Conservation at the moment. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, so I studied marine science at Waikato Uni, did a master's there, and then worked at NIWA for a long time, and now DOC, and so have quite a varied background now, having worked for a few different places, plus a whole bunch of community work here in Raglan, which has opened my eyes to not just the science.
Yeah. What comes with you into the process with that? Like, I'm trying to understand. I guess it's kind of a complicated question.
Like, what was my journey on this project?
Or what do you bring into it with all your experience and your academic stuff?
So for this particular project, what got me really interested in it was, like, I was working on a community project around climate change at the time.
Yeah.
And I was talking about that with Rachel and Cheryl, and then Rachel mentioned this program, and they were looking for people to become advisors, and I was really interested because it was an opportunity to be part of something a little bit bigger. Like the project I was working on was in Raglan, whereas this was sort of Waikato wide. It was led, there was training, there was a plan for the advisors to connect with businesses and step them through the process of coming up with an understanding of where they're at now and a mapping visioning process, and then a chance to set some targets.
Yeah.
And so what really attracted me to it was, this being part of this bigger organization on a regional scale where I would learn some stuff and I would apply my knowledge and I'd be helping to increase the resilience of the region through being one of these advisors who can help these smaller community groups.
Mm. So how hard is it to become from where you were to become an advisor? Like, you did a one-day course? That makes it sound easy.
No, it was a week.
You were given a day off by your employers.
Yeah, so I had to take a little bit of time off, but I was also given, Doc could see the value in me doing this course, so they also gave me some time, which I was really grateful for.
Yeah.
Because it's not part of my everyday job.
Yeah.
What was the rest of the question?
How hard is it to, I guess it's kind of like, how hard is it to do the job?
Oh, yeah. So the training was good. There was like a whole day of really focusing on like the sort of being a good treaty partner side of things and understanding the sort of how colonization is linked to climate change and how decolonization is linked to some of the solutions around climate change, like empowering indigenous ways and practices and people and culture and like just opening up to that kind of stuff. So there was a whole day on that, which was super interesting and good to learn about. And then there was a lot on the science, which I'm kind of lucky because I was already across most of that from my background and from my work.
Yeah.
So, but I think for other people, there were 11 of us in the course and we all had different backgrounds. And so some people were much stronger in areas than others. So my strength was the science, whereas others had other strengths. We had some time learning how to do the facilitation side of things. And then we had time learning how to, use the carbon calculator. The training was a year ago. I can't remember exactly, but there were a bunch of transferable skills that I had. And then it was just a matter of kind of focusing on, what's this package? What's the purpose? What are we really trying to do? So it wasn't hard. It was just more like getting real focused and fitting it in around everything else.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and so the process that you guys did with Raglan Chocolate, can we describe that?
I can certainly have a stab at that.
Okay.
And
get a little. Can you squeeze in a little closer to the mic?
Sure thing.
Get my mic.
So we went into this being vaguely conscious of our environmental feelings and credentials, but really it was just the way we behave rather than anything specific. So this took us through a process and we looked at I think 12 different areas or 10 different areas that we could analyze to some degree and put some descriptions around them, and then, as I said earlier, and then there were some outcomes that would come out which painted a picture of where we are now and then lead us into where we should strive to be. So it was that process that led to a report that Nicole has written, and it's a beautifully written report. And going back and reading it, I feel like it paints a better picture of what Simone and I are doing than we ever thought we do. But it's certainly very gratifying. But I can now go back and look at some specific things that we were that fell out of it, opportunities. One of them here, increasing dollar value on cacao for our Pacific neighbours and the ability to go meet our growers and directly affect their lives. So this was out in the... It was connected into social and also connected into, obviously, our raw materials and supplies and all that sort of thing. And as it happens, since doing this, I've been able to go up to Papua New Guinea and actually do that.
You've been up there quite a bit lately, haven't you?
I've been up there a couple of times this year.
So people might just be asking, how does that help with climate change? Like, because, I mean, there's obvious clear benefits to it, but specifically, how does that...
That's a really good question. And this program's not just about climate change, and that was one of the things we learned from it, that it's so much broader than that. When we're talking about climate change, we're also realizing that the social effects are so connected. What other effects, guys? The CO2 count, all these things, they come together, and it's not just a single thread.
Yeah.
And so we're thinking about circular economies and carbon capture, but it's all part of the parcel that this investigation opened our eyes up to, where we stand and where we can improve. Mm. So my trip to PNG was specifically about working with farmers so that they could improve their income by providing better quality product to higher value markets. So that might be a stretch to link it to this program, but it certainly came out of it as being an opportunity that had value for us to pursue.
Mm. Nicole, did you have something you wanted to add in there? So you're leaning into the mic.
I was just sort of thinking about the steps that we went through with Mike. So I was thinking how we did a site audit of the, like, they had part of their workplaces at their house, like the office and stuff, and then the other part of their workplaces up at their factory. So we went through and we just did a site audit of, like, energy and waste and, you know, travel, fuel, freight, that kind of stuff. So, like, a quantitative sort of part of the survey. And by doing that, now they can then have another look in a year's time and compare and sort of see how things have changed. So the quantitative, and then another part of the quantitative stuff was putting some of those numbers, like, into the carbon calculator. And because they're so small, some of their numbers were too small to actually generate a number in the calculator.
Right. so it's clearly set up for, like, large-scale organisations.
Yeah. But there's other calculators you can use. So one of the goals they set was maybe looking into some other calculators that are more fine-tuned for smaller businesses. So as part of this pilot, like, we're all learning and we're all figuring out, like, oh, where are we at and what do we use and what numbers do we put in and how do you do that? And, oh, maybe we need another calculator. And
so this is, Rachel, this is kind of a trial scheme, would you say?
Oh, it was always a pilot from the start.
It's a pilot,
funding for 25 small to medium enterprises to take part, and we could train up to 15 advisors. So I think in the end, 22 organisations went through the program and we trained 11 advisors.
And would you say there's issues around the fact that, especially for a small business, you're plugged into the modern industrial system and often there's not any other options other than to use what we do now. And it's hard to be specific. Well, I guess, I mean, cars on roads, you know, like that's just the way it works right now. Mm. Is that, as a small business, sometimes you just run into a brick wall with that?
We surveyed businesses, organizations, before they took part in the program, and then we did a post-survey to understand where they're at, what their knowledge was, what they were doing currently, and their understanding. And then afterwards, and I don't have the results here, but the changes were quite significant. We could see there was a shift, which is great. I mean, yes, there were things we needed to iron out as well, but overall we think it was successful, even though it was a pilot and it was evolving. But in terms of operations and behavior change and actions, some organizations had made some changes. For example, something as simple as putting in an LED light, so replacing your traditional light bulb with an LED light, can save 65% to 75%.
In that one fitting?
Just with one light. You know, so if you've got a building, some people had buildings, others didn't. That makes a significant difference, because usually the top three things in terms of CO2e production or greenhouse gas production would be your electricity, gas, and fleet.
Yeah.
You know, so some things that, like, low-hanging fruit, like LED lighting, waste, procurement, you know, simple things like bringing, you know, stainless steel mug or a ceramic cup, you know, rather than takeaway. Those are simple, easy, cheap things to do. but they progressively get harder. So with the mapping exercise, we had easy things to do right now that you can do that really won't cost much money at all.
Yeah.
And then they got progressively harder and more expensive as they went out. You know, some people obviously cannot afford to buy an EV. Mm. And others looked at Mevo, you know, carpooling options. I know one organization's actually got rid of its fleet and they're using Mevo now. So they don't have their own fleet anymore. Others were looking at providing bus cards for their staff, providing bicycle, like fleet bikes and for their staff. Others looked at different procurement options, energy efficiency appliances. So there were definitely actions that were taken, but that again is a journey, you know.
From
it's easy right now to do this to this is a harder thing we might look at later.
Yeah. So and I guess that we're talking about, like, Mike and Simone have been building a relationship with the suppliers and PNG. I guess once you have a good relationship with suppliers, then you actually can influence them as well, like, and you can ask them to do things in a way that's friendly to climate change. Is that on your mind, Mike?
Absolutely it is. There are all sorts of little things that we will try and do, even things like the plastic bags that our chocolate or our beans are imported in. Are currently, I think they're a blue plastic bag. Now, I can't recycle that blue plastic bag.
Yeah.
But in Raglan here, I can recycle a clear plastic bag.
Yeah.
So I've asked them to change to a clear plastic bag.
Okay.
And there's any number of things like that.
What was the lowest of low-hanging fruit that you had?
Actually, not relating to the Pacific at all, but... we realised our foil wrappers on our bars were not compostable, so we've changed, and we've in that time in the last 6 months we've changed to a paper wrapper.
Okay,
yep.
And the knowledge and technologies out there that you can do that now, because I imagine we used to do that and then it got lost, and people are now working on that again.
There's lots of technical nuance in that question, but the answer is yes. It wasn't easy, but we were able to change something. We're working with Convex. We're very lucky to have a company in Hamilton that specialises in compostables, and but they need to have barrier films and so forth, so they need to be quite a functional piece of packaging, and so we're able to work with them, get a solution, and we've changed that now.
Because that's always the issue. I know when Plastic Free Raglan was getting underway, Plastic Bag Free Raglan, that lots of shop owners, business owners were like, yeah, we'd love to not use plastic bags, but we don't know the first thing about where we would get an alternative from. So that became Plastic Bag Free Raglan's job, was to source that stuff for the local businesses and solve those problems. Because when you're running a business, often you're, as Mike has said, they're working 60 to 80 hours each a week. So, Nicole...
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that. So it was such a joy working with Mike and Simone, because it was subconscious to them, but their values were already so deeply held around, you know, being a good climate citizen.
Yeah.
And so part of the work was sort of bringing to the surface and to front of mind what they're already doing, because they had so much going on and so many things they were already doing. And so part of what we tried to do was, you know, pick those up and put those on paper and figure out, like, okay, you're already doing this. What else is going on? And that was part of the mapping. Like, after we'd done the site audit, after we had the calculator results, we put those in front of us and we had a look and did this mapping exercise where we tried to see what else could there be. And something else that popped up, I think, was... the opportunity for solar, for electricity, because they'd made a real effort with the gear that they use to make the chocolate to not use gas, to use electricity instead.
Yeah.
And so then the next step that we picked up in the mapping exercise was like, oh, yeah, you know, if that was solar, then that would bring the electricity bill down and reduce, you know, be another reduction that you could make. But, yeah, they had so much going on already that they were doing. They were already thinking about their procurement. Instead of being from, you know, South America, they'd brought it to the Pacific.
Yes,
so
okay.
Not only was that supporting the Pacific neighbours, but it was also reducing like freight costs.
Yeah.
And it was also, you know, like sometimes our Pacific neighbours are more onto it than us in terms of their awareness of climate because it's affecting them now.
Oh, especially all those atoll nations.
Right.
Yeah, they're very, very aware.
And
yeah.
So sometimes they have things to teach us. So there's this, yeah, there was a lot going on which we tried to sort of bring to front of mind and put down. And but yeah, they were already, like Mike and Simone were already so busy. I just tried to keep up and put it all in the report. But even since I've finished the report, they've done more. But that's just how, this is just a snapshot. Yeah.
So Rachel, is there going to be some kind of certification system for this? Like when they did Plastic Bag Free Raglan, the shops got to put a thing in the window saying that they were part of the scheme. And I know that, like, Mike, you've got the Karigo Project's logo on your chocolate bars because you're supporting them. So is there some way that they can be rewarded with good publicity for being on board with this program? Did that come into it?
Well, because it's a pilot, because it's essentially a trial, we just wanted to feel our way with it.
Yeah,
look
for
at
sure.
The results to see is it worth pursuing in the future. We think that it is, but we would require funding to run it.
Yeah.
Unless we looked at alternative models and we went to bigger businesses and said, if you took part in this, would you be prepared to sponsor a smaller organization or a charity to also take part? So really, it's going to probably sit more with GoEco and Parakore because I now have a job that's keeping me very occupied. So my input isn't as much as it was at the start. I am definitely keeping involved, but it's probably, I think it'll be up to Parakore and GoEco on how they want it to evolve into the next stage, but we would be seeking funding to run that to bring more NGOs on board. Because if you think about small to medium enterprises, I think it's something like 94% of organisations are small to medium enterprises. So
what's the biggest you can be and still be called a medium enterprise?
It was mainly around I can't remember the criteria exactly now, but it was mainly around the size, and I think it was a maximum of 20 staff, if I remember, 25
okay.
staff, and also income. So we were trying to deal with people that were more not-for-profit, more charity, more NGO, but we did do some small businesses and Māori organisations as well.
Places that don't have the infrastructure to develop their own climate policies, we talked about that at the start. Yeah, okay. And ultimately, how easy is it to measure success with each business? Can you say you get a gold star? No, that's demeaning. can you say that? Is there a line where you can say you've got under the line where you're no longer contributing to runaway climate change? Like, how do you measure it?
We didn't take that approach. We didn't weight anyone. We didn't hold up a number and go, you know, you're A or B or a C. We didn't do that. It was more about the journey, getting that behavior change, helping them understand
right.
and try to embed it in their thinking. Like, put a climate lens on your operations, on your thinking, on your decision making, you know, how you run things. I guess it's just about being more mindful about how you do things. Can this save me money if I do this? Can this reduce emissions if I do this? So it's more about that journey rather than saying you failed or you passed. But I know, I get what you're sort of heading towards. Should we go for verification and certification in the future? And can they get a badge? Possibly. People like that sort of thing. But at this stage, it was in its infancy. It was probably too soon to
yeah,
go
yeah,
down
that does
track.
Make sense. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, something that's good for PR is kind of the best reward for a lot of, because customers want to know, you know, these days a lot of savvy customers, they want to know. I'm also thinking too, in terms of the people, there's people out there who go, oh, it doesn't sound like much as we do. So it's just a waste. It's too hard. It's a waste of time. It's not worth bothering. You know, there's kind of that attitude out there. And I do think something that Nicole mentioned, that kind of like Mike and Simone had already been bothering to get away from gas to electricity powered, which then opened up, and by itself that isn't the whole journey, but once you've done that, then that opens up the next step of going to solar. So is that how you kind of see this, you guys?
Well, I think it depends on the organization and how much capacity they have, because, you know, what we did find was that some organizations were so keen, but they just didn't have time to, you know, sit down and spend 3 hours doing a mapping exercise or give, you know, a couple of hours for a site audit. So But now I've lost my train of thought. I was going to say something completely different. What were we talking about?
So we tailored the program to suit the organization, and that's the whole thing. It wasn't a generic out-of-the-box solution. So we specifically tailored parts of the program to match an organization if they didn't have the ability or capacity or resourcing to do the entire thing. So some organizations did the entire program. They did the calculator and the mapping and the whole shebang, and they got a report. They got an action plan. They got their targets set, and they set some, I guess, like pledges. We're going to commit to doing these actions by this date, try and get our emissions down, and they're going to revisit the calculator. They're going to, you know, see if there's been any changes. But I guess what Nicole's saying is that we found that some of the really smaller organizations really didn't have the resourcing, even though they were given an advisor. Yeah. So we had to tailor the program to suit what they could actually deliver on.
Yeah.
I can't actually even remember your question either. What was the question?
Well, I've got goals in front of me here, and I think where I was going to go was that, you know, we ran through the process, and you were sort of asking about whether people can get a rating. And then we were thinking more about like how it's been a bit of a journey. And I think like the journey for this particular one was, you know, there is a section of the report which is about the goals. So they've got a bit of a baseline picture of where they're at. For Mike and Simone, the baseline is moving fast, so it's probably changed. They probably need another, you know, refresh in, I don't know, a few months' time or something.
Yeah.
But they had goals around, like, they want to create a vision and strategy. So they've got it in their heads, but they need to dig into that and, you know, write something up. And that's something they were really keen to do. Kind of tried to do it during the process and realized it needed, you know, a separate piece of work. So we parked it and put it as a goal. And they've got goals around looking into the carbon calculator, goals around like looking into solar, goals around fuel. So they've already converted. No, they've already got an EV,
yep.
And thinking about converting their combi van also to electric. You know,
see,
so they're
now
just
I was wondering about that van. How old's that van, Mike?
It's 1975. 1975. So yes, she's a bit of a old smoker.
Yeah. But you're considering, but it's almost part of the identity of the business, is it? Like when you've been at the creative market, you've had that parked behind you at times.
That's right. It's part of our backstory and part of our image, and so it's an opportunity rather than anything else. If we could electrify the van in the future, I think the underlying takeout from this whole process for me is that there's so many incremental pieces in this. How one thing you do, it might seem to be a tiny thing, but it does, like you said, it leads on to something else, and it leads on to something else, and until the whole thinking process of being better to the planet is just a continuous subconscious mindset.
Right. And is that, Rachel, what you're talking about? Behaviour change, like Extreme Zero Waste talks about behaviour change. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about in that regard?
I just remembered your previous question. It was right. Why should people do this? So one, you know, moral imperative. Like this is the biggest, climate change is the biggest, most critical issue we will ever face and are facing right now. I don't think people necessarily see the connections between food prices, you know, storm events, food chain supply. It's everything's connected, but I'd love to come back and talk about that at another time.
Yeah, we'll
and
do
and
that.
In addition to that, you know, there's cost savings, and like you said earlier, it's, you know, PR. I mean, consumers are looking for more environmentally conscious organizations. Funders are also, and that's something that's really important as well, there are some funders who are will be expecting in the very near future that when people putting in a funding application that they will need to have some climate change or environmental plan or policy or process if they want to get funding. I think that's coming also.
Are you looking at me?
No, I'm just saying.
we literally produce hot air. Nicole.
There's one more thing I'd love to highlight out of their goals is that they were really strong on education and storytelling. So they were really thinking about like the fact that the chocolate needs to be like ethical because there's places in the world where it's not.
Mm.
And so Mike and Simone were thinking, they were really thinking like right to the very, very beginning of their sort of procurement chain, if you want to put it that way, or the very beginning of their story. And they were thinking about, like, how can we make the world a better place by where we get our beans from, and you know how that's supporting those communities, but not just thinking about that side of it, but also what are our opportunities, and they've got this in their goals, you know, what are their opportunities for education storytelling around ethical food, you know, whether it's formal education through students or informal just through chats as the opportunity arises, or whether somebody, maybe they can be interviewed by someone who's actually doing some investigative reporting. So yeah, there was that side of it as well, which is also, you know, it might not sound like it's linked to climate action, but it actually kind of is.
Well, that ethical procurement is, it does go, it just walk hand in hand with dealing with climate issues as well. It just seems to, my observation, like if you're interested in one, you're usually interested in the other as well. Yeah. So, folks, we've been talking to Rachel Goddard and Nicole Hancock and Mike from Raglan Chocolate. And thank you for bringing some chocolate in, Mike, by the way.
Pleasure.
Yeah. Always appreciate this. So this is, where to from here, Rachel? Have you produced a report for the various councils that funded this and said, here we go, it was a success, give us some more money, we'd do some more?
So I see my role as the founder. So I created the program.
Yeah.
But I am essentially handing that program over to Go Eco and Parakore to take it forward, because I'm oversubscribed with my current mahi, and it will be up to them how it evolves and how they will seek funding. But yes, we produced reports for all of the funders, and I'm pretty sure Parakore and Go Eco will be seeking funding to run the next stage, because we would love to go back to those organizations and say, a year later, how did you do?
Yeah,
you know, we need to benchmark to understand what the shifts were again, and are they still on board? Do they need more input? And then to bring other organizations on board, because we have to do this. We have to make change, you know, as individuals, as organizations, as businesses, etc.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, thanks heaps for coming in, guys. Okay. Appreciate it.